Welcome to the Resilient Training Lab podcast.
I would love to talk about that.
Let's do it.
All right. Ryan's the host. I just kind of sit back and ask random questions.
It's a very informal hosting. Like, sometimes I ask questions, sometimes I just sit there and look at you. So we just kind of
that works.
Yeah, we just flow. Go with the flow here.
I'm here for it.
Awesome, dude. So I don't know what number this is. We're on another episode of the Resilient Training Lab podcast. So today we're joined by Terry Ratty. So Terry, thank you for Ratty. God damn it. To be fair, I've only heard Paul pronounce your name. I thought it was Ratty.
It's okay. Everybody thinks it's a long A. Or it's a short A. It's a long A. It's Ratty.
I will blame Paul.
I'm still gonna continue to call you Terry Ratty, so
fucking they did that at shows. Like, at the main stage of the Arnold, they were like, up next, Terry Ratty. And I was like, nope, not my name. Not it. It's not my name.
Start looking around like, who's that? Who's going? Yeah,
he's strong.
It's awesome, man. So, Terry, I am familiar with you only through Paul. So maybe you can give me a little bit of a background, just like how you came into contact with Paul, how you guys started working together, what your current training was like at the time. And
so I had taken like a small hiatus from competing and wanted to focus on my health. And I'm really good friends with Carlos Reyes. Carlos and I are friends, and I reached out to Carlos, saw the type of training he was doing a lot. Like, I think Paul had him doing a lot of work capacity stuff at the time, a lot of cardio stuff. And I was like, okay, I can't hold myself accountable to do that right now. So I'm going to reach out to this guy. Carlos bragged and bragged and bragged. So I reached out to Paul, and then he sent me my first week's workout, and it was fucking horrible. And it was the worst. And then, that's how I came in contact with Paul. And then he coached me. We worked together for a little bit, didn't we? Like a couple months.
Yeah.
Conditioning, and then we did some powerlifting. And then I was like, dude, powerlifting is boring. This is boring. It had nothing. Like, the programming worked. I got really strong pretty quick. But God, was it boring. It was the most boring thing I have ever done in my life. Yeah. Like,
get to do three things four to five times a week.
I was like stoked. I was like, oh, dude, I'm going to bench like three, four times a week. This is going to be awesome. And then like after 3 weeks, I was like, I have to bench again? I don't want to do this. Like, oh man, powerlifting is – I am in order of events, it's like – strongman, Olympic lifting, bodybuilding, then powerlifting for me. Like, bodybuilding, work capacity, cardio, then powerlifting. Like, it's just because I suck at squatting. It's only because I suck at squatting. That's it.
That's hilarious. Yeah, powerlifting is pretty repetitive.
It is.
Real low on the totem pole there.
Yeah.
We didn't even beat out conditioning.
Yeah, I was going to say, he put conditioning above powerlifting.
Yeah. Like, I want to feel like I'm doing something. Like, it's just like a heavy squat, and then I'm like, oh, my knee hurts. Ow. And then, like, all right, go sit down for 5 minutes and then do another one here. Like, geez.
Yeah, you don't really feel anything but, like, tired. People are always, like, during meat prep, they're like, I don't really feel sore or anything. I'm just, like, tired and want to eat anything. Yeah, sounds about right.
You're hungry and tired. But no, it was awesome. And like, I'm a coach as well. So like, I coach more on like strongman, bodybuilding. I coach like high school athletes in wrestling. I wrestled and stuff. So it's like, I'll coach on that side. But learning from Paul, like just how powerlifting programming, you know, like the progressions, like talking to people like Carlos and learning, you know, the different, cause the training variables from sport to sport are so different. Like in strongman, you have to be able to, peak up to a one rep max, within a couple weeks. Like this is at the pro level. You have to be able to peak up to a one rep max within a couple weeks or have that work capacity to do a ton of reps. You know, being able to do things for 60 seconds versus one rep, you know, it's like the training styles are so dramatically different in terms of frequency, intensity, volume. And it's really interesting to see, just from a coaching perspective, how like, you know, a coach that is knowledgeable like Paul, approaches something like that, because anyone can make a day one person super strong, but taking someone like Carlos Reyes and getting him to hit PRs is like, you know, that the proof's in the pudding with that one. Like, so
yeah, those PRs get harder and harder to come by, and strongman is such a unique sport. I mean, you could have in the same competition a one rep max deadlift and then something like power stairs where you're doing like really a high rep deadlift, so you have to be like in shape to do both things at the same time.
Dude, I've got a client right now that I'm prepping, and this is the first time I've ever seen it. The guy in the contest put a yoke, but it's an offset yoke. Like one side weighs more than the other side of the yoke. And I was like, look, I'm all for creativity, but that's just dangerous. Like that's just like not something you should be prepping for at all, because that shouldn't exist.
He's dude, like, well, anything goes. Dude,
listen, I'm all for strongman, but let's be like, it's 2020. Let's be smart man too. Like,
we can go back to bending bars over our head.
Those were my favorite years to watch. So. I'm okay with that. I'm from the Midwest, man. We're all about bending pointless metal things to entertain ourselves.
Can bring back the sumo wrestling and
oh yeah, dude, sumo wrestling would have been awesome. I would love that.
So I know you're you were an elite strongman. Could you give me a run through of what like your strongman resume looks like, or your accolades?
Let's see, from 2015 to 2017, I didn't lose. And then I won my first like major show. Like there was obviously like Indiana's Strongest Man, Kentucky's Strongest Man, stuff like that. I won those. But my first major show was the North American Log and Deadlift Championships. I won that one, 90 kilo. Shortly thereafter, I won 90 kilo World Strongest Man. Then after that, I did the Dallas Europa. Won that. And then after that, I did Texas Strongest Man as a heavyweight and won that. And then I did, And then I did World Strongest Man in 2017. It was my second 105 show ever. I got like eighth out of 36, but I weighed 212. Like I was severely underweight for that show. I had just bumped into that weight class. Then after that show, I did the Arnold Classic and won that at 105. Then I did the Dallas Europa again and got second to Sean DeMarinas, who's a freaking legend. He's the only pro. He's the only pro that since I've been a pro, there were three pros that beat me when I was at 2017 World Strongest Man, but I wasn't a pro yet. When I became a pro, the only pro that's ever beaten me was Sean. And that was at the Dallas Europa. And then shortly thereafter at 2018, America's Strongest Man, he beat me. I got second. He only beat me by like half a point. Bitch.
Sean, the first time I met Sean DeMarinas was at Nationals in, I don't know where the fuck we were, in the middle of nowhere, Texas. And he was a lightweight pro at the time. And the lightweight pros were competing with the heavyweight, like the amateur heavyweight weights. And he ended up winning the lightweight pros and beating all the heavyweights as a lightweight. He had the most points out of everybody. So he ended up technically winning the heavyweight pro card as a lightweight pro. But I think
he ended up giving it to like a legend, weight. Man. he's a legend, man. He's the most impressive strongman I've ever like encountered.
And no offense to Sean, if you listen to this, but you know, the first time you see him, I he had this long hair. It looked like he was just, you know, some dude that never lifted weights in his life and, you know, played video games in his mom's basement, and he comes out and log presses like 400 pounds. Sorry, Sean.
He's insane, man. He's insane.
That's a long list of accomplishments.
And then, I won.
He's not done yet. He's not done yet.
Yeah. I won. I was going to do 2018 World's Strongest Man, but after I didn't want to use supplements from September of 2018 all the way through the winter up until the Arnold 2019. And I was going to do the Arnold 2019 as a heavyweight. And so I decided to take the winter off. But in February, I actually was front squatting and went to AFib. So went to the doctor over that and then took some time off. And my last show, I promised, was going to be 2019 America's Strongest Man. And I ended up winning that one. And that was my last strongman show. So
what were some of, what's that?
Go ahead.
I was going to, this whole podcast is just scuffed.
Yeah, it's fine.
So what are some of
the, God.
So competing in strongman, what are some events that you really liked or you were really good at versus what are some of the ones that you struggled with?
I was never really bad at any of them. Yoke was probably my worst event, and that's, but I mean, I still, even I would place like top four or five, you know, in a pro show with my yoke. I carried like a 1,050-pound yoke at 228 pounds for, you know, 40 feet. I never really had a bad event, but the events I enjoy were obviously like any rep or max, deadlift or log, circus dumbbell, all the pressing. I hate Husafell carry. I'm not bad at it, but I just don't like that event isn't about strength. It's about who can take the most pain. And it's not that I can't take the most pain because I've only lost Husafell once, but it's like, I don't want to take the pain. It's like, if I can avoid the pain, I'm going to avoid it. So it's actually funny. I was in a show with a Conan's wheel, at the Dallas Europa in 2017. And I had won the log press, which was the first, it was an axle clean and press. It was the first event. I won that one, then won the deadlift max after that. It was two max events. And then the next event was Conan's wheel. And the guy that I was talking shit to, my buddy, he's a pro now, Tommy Sharp. He is so amazingly good at Conan's wheel. Like, I mean, unbelievably good. And I knew that. And I don't like, what you don't know about me is if it's an event I don't like, I don't fucking train it. So, so the Conan's wheel is coming up and I'm just getting it in his head. I'm like, Tommy, buddy, I've been training this Conan's wheel. Let me tell you about that. I've been training it. Let me tell you, I didn't even deadlift. I just worried about this Conan's wheel. That's how much I wanted it. So obviously, Paul, you know, you go last if you're in first place. So I see Tommy going, he carries a 700-pound Conan's wheel, like 5.5 revolutions. It was insane. So I go and I pick it up and I carried it 3 revolutions and the judge is with me and I go, where'd the second, like I stopped and I go, where'd the second place guy go? And he said, like one step ahead of you. And so I took 2 more steps and dropped it. And Tommy was like, what the fuck, man? And I said, I don't like that. I'm not doing that. I said, I just wanted you to gas yourself out. And then the yoke was after that. And he like, he can beat me in the yoke, but he was so tired from the Conan's wheel that he just buckled under the yoke. And it totally threw him off his game. But yeah, if I don't have to do it, I'm not going to do it. If I don't have to go for broke, I'm not going to go for broke.
You're also talking to the keg toss master here.
Oh yeah?
You? No, you. Throwing sandbags into the roof of your gym.
Yeah. Whoops. I was bummed, man. Funny story about ASM 2019. We had a sandbag toss there and it's the first time I had ever lost a sandbag toss. And I'm really meticulous about my magnesium and my potassium and my salts and stuff like that. So the day before the contest, I'd taken in like enough salt and enough potassium and magnesium. And I had it all scheduled out. And then I was going to get 2 IVs at 8 PM in order to have the hydration carry over into the next day when the contest was. Well, the guy who was supposed to do my IVs blew out my vein 3 times with the same catheter. And so I couldn't get those 2 bags and I didn't have enough time because I was going to go to bed at 10. I didn't have enough time to orally compensate on the hydration. So I woke up the next day, took my blood pressure, and like the day of the contest, my blood pressure was like 150 over 90, like, which is super high for me. So I go into the contest. I had hit a 390 log in training. And then in the contest, I picked up like a 330 log and it was heavy. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to suck. I put all this into this. So I hit a 370 log, and after I dropped it, I had like this small like seizure and like just started like shaking, and people were freaking out, and like I was cussing at them. I was like, don't touch me, I'll be fine. And so then the sandbag toss came around, and when I went to do the bags, like I was just like everything was like cloudy and white in my vision, like from the like the blood pressure and whatever was going on, and like the lack of hydration. My veins were really tiny because I hadn't, like, I was so constricted. So I actually ran over to this random supplement company that was there and grabbed, you know, the Gorilla Chemist.
Yep.
I grabbed like his vasodilator, and I just like took two scoops and like threw it in my mouth, and I said, I'll be back to pay for this, and threw it on the table and ran back over, and it helped, you know, get my blood circulating. But then the sandbag toss came around, and like, I was just too dizzy and couldn't get the last bag over. So that's the first time I ever lost a bag toss. I'll probably never let that go.
And this, folks, is why you do not cut weight unless you are a elite level athlete going to win.
Do you want to know what's sad, Paul? What? I didn't cut weight.
What are you doing, dude?
I didn't cut weight. I just like to get, it's just tradition. Like, I'm like I do the same thing for every contest. I always get a bag. I always get two bags or two IVs before a contest, and I get my salts and my potassium and everything leveled out before a contest. But yeah, I weighed in that show at like 228. Like, I haven't cut for a show since 2016 when I cut for 90 kilo World Strongest Man. I cut 27 pounds that time. but no.
So this is a handful of high-level strength athletes that have been saying, don't cut weight. So
yeah, it's stupid. Like, yeah, it's dumb. I don't see why people – like, if I have clients that are like, oh, you know, I got this big contest, I need to cut weight for it, and I'm like, it's Maryland's Strongest Man. I know it's a big contest, but it's not a big contest, man. There's plenty – like, and here's the thing. Like, if you're cutting weight and crushing that weight class every single show – like, I have a couple high-level athletes that they'll win a show, qualify for nationals, qualify for the Arnold in their weight class. Then they want to do another local show, and they're like, all right, I need to cut. And I'm like, you're already qualified. You need to compete up a weight class. How are you supposed to know what you suck at in the heavier weight classes if you don't go up and do it, you know? So
that's it. So you weren't cutting weight, and you had these – negative health side effects. So it seems, as you know, as you kind of went along your strongman career, you had a couple of health concerns that, you know, potentially started to shift your mindset towards strength training. And that's kind of what I wanted to get into today, is that transition from, you know, literally being at the top of your sport but not being healthy, having, you know, a bunch of issues health-wise, and the decision to take your health more seriously and broaden your kind of training qualities.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. Like, Paul, I'm sure you remember whenever we first started working together, like, I was hitting some pretty ridiculous numbers. I had hit like a 405 pound log press at like 235 body weight. You know, I was hitting 525 front squats for reps at, you know, 200 and whatever pounds. But it was, and here's the thing. I had spent a year, for those of you that are listening, I was doing, how much was it? I was doing like 500 and I was working with Mike Mastel at the time, and I was doing 525 pound front squats for like triples. And on my last set of triples, my heart clicked over into AFib. And I had had it happen 3 months prior. I woke up and my heart was in AFib, but I didn't know what it was. and it went away within a couple hours. Then this one happened, and I know a lot of people ignore this stuff, a lot of strength athletes, but I said, fuck that, I'm not ignoring this. So I go to the doctor, and they're like, okay, you're in atrial fibrillation. They explain to me what's going on. They do a bunch of tests, echocardiograms, nuclear stress tests. They, you know, the whole kit and caboodle while I still had insurance. and they told me I had left ventricular hypertrophy. Now me, from what they said, they were like, you know, abusing steroids and your training and yada, 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 your lifestyle factors are what created this. If you don't stop, you're going to die. Well, you know, you are inculcated when you're young to believe that doctors know everything, and they absolutely, it's their word is sacred. So I took it very seriously and immediately said, I'm going to do one more show. It's going to be America's Strongest Man. I'm going to fucking win it. And that's it. But the more I start researching and learning and just about the human body in general, I start to discover that, okay, let's think about the type of training I've been doing, which was very sport specific for the last few years while trying to gain weight. So, you know, I went from in 2016 being, you know, 217, 216 pounds to the beginning of 2019, where I was 200 and I think I had peaked out at 258 pounds. And during that time, I was eating a ton of food, like clean a majority of the time, but it was like 80-20. So like I was still eating like pizza and stuff like that. I wasn't saying no to food because I was just trying to put on weight. And the problem was, is that type of training with the heavy yokes, carrying things for 60 feet, doing things over 60 seconds, when you're that big at my size, I'm only, you know, 5'11", your heart has to pump so much harder to fill the muscles. And that's all I was muscle. I was 260 with abs. Like I was just pure muscle, and your heart has to pump so hard to fill those muscles. Well, the left ventricle is your main pumping chamber, as everybody knows, or if you don't know, now you do. So the left ventricle was compensating to supply my body with the adequate amount of blood it needed. So I am just thinking from there, okay, well, you know, my heart's fucked for life, yada, yada, yada. And then I start reading, okay, well, my body is adapting to the way my body is. That's why my left ventricle got bigger. And the reason my heart went to AFib is so when the heart contracts, it's spiking calcium, and then magnesium is the counter to that to make it pump. So I had a lot of calcium in my system, but not enough magnesium to counteract that. And it was causing, I had hypokalemia. So I had low potassium and I had low magnesium, but you can't fix the potassium until you fix the magnesium. And I wasn't taking the right kind of magnesium at the time. I was only taking a little bit. So my heart wigged out. My SA nodes sent my heart into atrial fibrillation from the lack of minerals that it needed. So it wasn't an actual structural issue with my heart. It was just me not knowing the right things to do. But as you learn, as you get in, I'm seeing Dr. Eric Serrano now, who works with a ton of professional strength athletes. And then, you know, we talked about everything going on. He gives me, you know, EKGs. We discuss, you know, my hormones and stuff like that. And now, since I've been seeing him, I have no heart palpitations anymore. I have no health issues anymore. My blood pressure's relatively under control if I could stop drinking coffee. But other than that, man, it was mainly just the choice of me freaking myself out, not wanting to die early, not wanting to sacrifice my body for a sport that where when you win America's Strongest Man, you get $1,000 and the guy who gets second place gets invited to a bigger show before you do. Like it's, you know, so I just, it's strongman has become who's got a bigger Instagram following and who's better at social media than who's the strongest. So I didn't want to be in that anymore. So I decided to transition into weightlifting because it gives me an excuse to be natural. I can still lift, you know, heavy weights. I enjoy the training. It gives, like, I actually prefer squatting in heels and high bar squatting versus low bar squatting. So I really enjoy the training aspect of Olympic lifting now. But that was kind of my health issue. So like when people would say, oh man, how's your heart? What's, is your heart okay? yeah, my heart's fine. My heart just did what it was supposed to do because that's how the body reacts to that style of training. Anyone that's training strongman or powerlifting has some form of ventricular hypertrophy. If you don't, then you're probably going to black out while you're lifting because your heart can't pump enough blood to where your muscles, you know, where your muscles need it. And it's funny because my resting heart rate when I was 260 was about 60 beats per minute. And then when I lost the weight, now I'm down to like 219. Now my resting heart rate is anywhere from 42 to 39 beats per minute, just because my heart is so strong. It doesn't need all of that, you know, to pump blood into my muscles because I don't have as much muscle mass now.
Yeah. Left ventricular hypertrophy is something that happens a lot in endurance athletes as well. They call it athlete's heart. It's a natural adaptation to training. So usually when you're looking at negative, I mean, at a certain point it can become problematic if it becomes too much hypertrophy, but that's really rarely seen except in like super, super, super ultra endurance athletes, these crazy fuckers running 250 miles at a
right.
time. Usually when you see like steroid related heart issues, it's due to an overall enlargement of the heart and not just the left ventricle.
Right.
Just for the information sake.
Right. And you know, my doctor, he had never lifted. My cardiologist, he has never lifted. He's never trained or anything like that. And he just sees like my heart overall, the size is normal. Every chamber is normal. The left ventricle is the only one that's swollen. And he's like, you know, steroids, your training, your lifestyle, that's what's doing this, your weight, yada, yada, yada. And he's not wrong, but it's his diagnosis is missing a lot of context with it. And then you go seek a professional that actually does powerlifting and does strongman and has the research behind, like, you know, the science and stuff like that of the body. And he says, look, this is a normal adaptation of your body. He said, you just have to be mindful of that. And that's what I do now. And I could have kept going. I could have kept pushing past it. And who knows what would have happened. I mean, I'm maybe my dreams would have came true and I'd have made it to World's Strongest Man. But at the same time, it's like, I'm almost glad it happened because it forced a lot of realizations in myself as a person because I was very selfish. I had broken off like an engagement during that period, like winning the Arnold, like right the day after I won the Arnold, I ended my engagement with my fiance at the time, just ended it. I was very selfish. I was very non-emotionally available to my friends and family. I was very... I was a very strong person and I'm glad I got to meet that version of myself to see what I was capable of. So I have those memories, but at the same time, it's like, that was not conducive for a long-term healthy future because I was alienating, a lot of important people in my life for, self vindication or whatever.
What do you think it was that like through alienating them or through, like closing yourself off, how did that allow you to be a better competitor?
For instance, so my fiance at the time never came to a show. My family never came to a show. They would want to go sometimes, but like my dad hated that I did strongman. My mom didn't like it either. And those are for different reasons. My mom just didn't want to see me get hurt. She liked that I'd win and she'd like, you know, she'd want to know how I do, but she didn't want to watch it in person. And my dad, I don't know if it was like, God, I hope he doesn't listen to this, but it was more so like the, it's more so like the bragging about what I did versus, you know, being proud of what I did. And that stems a lot of the reason why I did that stuff was, you know, trying to get approval. But it's, I never invited people because, like, I mean, all my trophies, for instance, are in a box in my closet. I don't have them hanging up. I wanted to be the best at this shit because I had that complex from my childhood of, you know, dad left, why can't I be good enough? You know, why am I sitting on the porch when there's a baseball game going on that I'm supposed to be at, you know, waiting? So it's like, I alienated and cut people out because then I don't have to rely on anybody but myself. And my failures are on me. I mean, it's Paul, remember whenever I was prepping for ASM and I said, I'm going to handle these last whatever amount of time. It's because if I'm doing a contest, I like to do my own programming for it, because if I fail, I don't want to blame anyone but myself. That's the reason I did track. It's the reason I wrestled. I didn't really do team sports. If I fail, I want it to be my fault. That's it. So that alienating people allowed me to keep that mindset. You know, I didn't want people there watching me compete, because then I got to worry about, well, am I going to impress them? Well, are they going to be okay? Well, you know, what are they thinking right now? I just want to worry about me. So
I think you brought up a couple interesting things that I want to talk about is like, I don't think people fully recognize the sacrifice it takes to be elite at literally any sport or any endeavor, really. And I think that speaks kind of volumes to it. And, you know, as you're, you know, at this elite level and you have this health scare, I think most people would be like, fuck that. You know, I'm the best. Nobody can beat me. Like, I'm going to just keep, you know, pushing forward. But you were able to kind of step back and see the path that you were going down and decide that there was, you know, more to life than just strongman. So, like, at what point did you realize this? Was it before American Strongest Man when you were like, had that health scare and you're like, oh, this is my last show? Or what was it, not until like after you won American Strongest Man and you were like, oh fuck, what did I just do?
Well, I think it was after, because I had a little bit of resentfulness because I had won America's Strongest Man, but a fellow competitor of mine like got invited to the Arnold Pro Series in like South America or South Africa or something like that. And I'm like, I just beat him and he got invited to these bigger shows. And it's like, it was more so like, I love the sport and it like, it makes me upset. Like, man, I'll still lose sleep over it. It's like, I know that if you guys, people don't follow me, I'm very abrasive online. Like, I'm very opinionated. I don't try to be anyone I'm not for Instagram. I don't try to put this fake persona up like these people that have all these followers and stuff do. Like, I know them. Like, I fucking know you, dude. And I know the shit you post on IG are not the same thing. You can fool everyone else, but I know who you are. And so it's like, and there's tons of them out there like that. That's why, like, a lot of the people I respect, like Sean DeMarinas, he's 100% of the time. Carlos, 100% of the time. Rob Kearney, same. Like, it's, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I just couldn't, I couldn't be that guy. And it's, you have to be that guy to get somewhere in the sport. And I'm not going to do that. So it's like, you know, I'm going to focus on something else that's even more politicky, which is Olympic lifting. I had to separate the id and the ego, and I don't know.
If you haven't heard one of Terry's Instagram story rants, you're missing out on life completely.
The intro is literally like, I don't give a fuck how many of you unfollow me. Like, here's how it is. I love it.
I'm as my DMs say, I'm just some stupid libtard. So whatever. you know, it is what it is. But I don't know. I'm glad it happened, because I used to have like this very narrow mind. I've noticed that like the mindset I had on politics even back then was very individualistic and self-centered. And then all this stuff happens and I start trying to realize the things that make me happy and make my blood pressure low and make like me feel good about myself as a person are when I'm not doing anything but caring about the people around me and like my neighbors, because like if the people around you are happy, they're going to bring positive energy into your life. And if they're bringing positive energy into your life, well, then how can you be in a bad mood? How can you be upset? You know what I'm saying? Like you're going to get the energy you surround yourself with. So.
Yeah. And I think that happens in strength sports a lot where people because it's such an individual sport, people kind of alienate themselves and, you know, start to become very self-centered and focused on
so toxic.
just them. And they wonder why they're always so miserable and why their emotions kind of ride with how their training's going. You know, hitting PRs, they're on top of the moon, not hitting PRs, and they're a depressive fuck. So it's like when you at some point need to be able to expand past, you know, powerlifting or strongman being your only identity. And, you know, I think that's something that over the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, I've come to the harsh realization of, and I'm not even that great of a powerlifter.
Well, it's tough. That's why like, I try like set, like focusing on like the other PRs in life. Like, okay, I read this many books this week, or I read, you know, I woke up at this time today to get this much stuff done. I got this much work done in this day. Like those are the other types of PRs that people don't really even think about that have so much more of an impact on your day-to-day life than fucking hitting a new deadlift. Like, dude, I can't, like, I don't remember the last time I hit a deadlift PR, and I could give two shits less. Like, the deadlift PRs I hit now are like, I did that for hook grip for this many reps. That's awesome. Like, you know, and it's like, I don't even know if that's a weight PR. But it's, I feel like people get so caught up in like the superficial things that come with lifting. Like, I have a client right now who's just going through the hardest time because she had a hip labrum tear, and the tear in her hip labrum triggered some like rheumatoid issue, and it caused her entire leg to swell up. Like now she's on prednisone trying to get it down. They had to switch her off prednisone because, as you know, like prednisone causes muscle atrophy. So right now she's in her head, like not hitting the numbers she was hitting before she won the Arnold. And so I have to like remind her, I'm like, hey, like, you were 100% then, you know, like you had this going for you then, this was happening then, COVID hadn't happened then, you know, it's like all of these factors come into play, and she's just really hard on herself. And I have to remind her, I'm like, look, man, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And also, if you just hold on to what you used to be the whole time, you're never, ever going to get any better than where you are now, because you're holding yourself to these expectations of what it was like to being at the top. Like, yeah, I'm probably never going to push press a 405 or 10 pound log, whatever it was, again. Okay, well, maybe I can do it on a clean and jerk. Who cares? Maybe I can do it out of a rack. Maybe I'll never do it again. And it's okay if I don't, because there are so many other things in life that are way more important that I could PR on. Like being a good boyfriend. That's what I'm really trying to do. I'm really trying to PR on being a good boyfriend. Like remembering important things, like to take the trash out.
Got me beat there. Yeah,
those are the real PRs. Like the apartment. So when she comes home, she's like, "Oh my god, the apartment's clean," and I'm like, "Yeah, I like that. That's PR."
You can just hire someone to do that.
Well, I don't have Paul Milano money.
I think that you just described a mindset that I think is, and pause, that is super common in the gym or like strength sports, right? People end up there usually for, I don't want to say like it's a healthy activity, but people make it almost unhealthy in their both their approach and their mindset around it. And so like, how did you, or like you mentioned that maybe never touching a 405 pound log again is okay. And I bet you, if you were sitting here 3 years ago and heard yourself say that, you'd want to knock your own teeth out. Right. So like,
yeah, for sure. Probably because I was like 3 years ago, I was on a ton of trend and I was like, I would never say that. Yeah, no, and it's a super common mindset that people get stuck into. Look at the quality of life that would bring, though, if you hung on to that. Like, look at Eddie Hall right now. You think Eddie Hall's like, I'm never gonna strict press a 500-pound axle again? Like, no, he's like,
money.
Yeah, he's enjoying his life. Like, he's reaping the fruits of what he's put in, and that goes for everybody. Like, if you're just a general gym lifter and you hit a sick PR like 2 years ago, but then some stuff happened and like you're not hitting those same numbers now, it's like, okay, well, what else are you crushing in life? What else are you crushing in life? Focus on that. Like, focus on the things you're crushing in life, and it's only going to make your lifting better. Like, when I stopped worrying about that, then my lifts started going back up. Like, my lifts are going up now. I hit a, like yesterday, what was it? I hit a 150, that's kilograms, because I'm an Olympic athlete now. I hit a 150, it was like a full power clean to hang clean to split jerk. I never did that, but it was sick, like, and I was stoked, and that's a PR, and it's like, okay, I'll take that, you know, and it's not 400 pounds, but it's the little things, like, people get so caught up in this life and don't realize you get one chance to be alive, and they're going to focus on what they did 3 years ago. It's like, imagine, like, you want to forget the bad things you did. You don't want people to hold you accountable for the bad things you did, but you yourself can't forget about like the good things you did and hold yourself accountable to now. Does that make sense? Like, or am I just rambling?
Yeah.
I think what I was getting at when I brought that up was just that I believe a lot of people attach their value or their self-worth just to like the numbers that they're hitting in the gym. And it's like, yes, you are way more than just that.
Yeah, for sure. You're spot on.
And it's like lifting is something that we want to do for the rest of our lives. We know that it has health benefits for the rest of our lives. We also know that we can't continually hit PRs for the rest of our lives. So at some point in time, we have to start to fall in love with the process and all of the stuff that goes into lifting weights so that it can enhance our lives instead of taking away from our lives and like pigeonholing ourselves into being this roller coaster emotions of a person based on how their training is going versus being a more stable, well-rounded individual where weightlifting or powerlifting or strongman is enhancing you as a person and helping you, teaching you things like how to do hard things and teaching you perseverance and how to be persistent with something over a long period of time instead of just attaching yourself to a number. Because like Terry's been saying, there's way more to life than just that number, and there's going to be times in your life where lifting needs to take a back seat because there's other things that you need to put your energy and efforts into, and there's going to be times in your life where you have extra energy and effort to put into lifting. And you know, if you are constantly chasing this number or these numbers that you know may have hit, you know, before you had two kids or before you started a new business or before COVID and you had to sit, like, not be in the gym for four freaking months. Like, it's not about those absolute numbers. It's about
the process
that goes into it.
Absolutely. And it's like, if you're bumming yourself out, like constantly having, like, what is the purpose of lifting if you're just going to be bummed out that you're not hitting these numbers all the time? It's like, you want to be miserable all the time? Like, that sounds horrible. Like take the time to, and Paul, like, you guys, like, Resilient Training Labs is great for this stuff. It's like, you guys know conditioning, and like, if like I steer my athletes in this direction, hey, if you're having a bad time, like say your mobility is an issue or you're not enjoying the gym as much, pick up something different. And having a coach that knows their shit can still help drive you to being better at those goals. Like, say, you know, I have an athlete that wants to get into BJJ or something like that. Well, it's like, well, we don't have to stop going to the gym for that. We don't have to stop doing our work. We're just going to shift direction. You can still deadlift and bench and squat and do things, but it won't be on the same basis and it won't be the same way. And we'll be working on this more and that more, but it's a way for you to redirect your training to where you're going to hit new PRs. And they might not be weight PRs or something you're comparing yourself to what you used to do, but they're going to be work capacity PRs. They're going to be rep PRs. They're going to be, you know, mentality PRs. So it's like, you don't have to use age and all that stuff as an excuse to not hit PRs at different things in life. Like, if you've never done it before, it's always going to be a fucking PR. Like, that's why every time I'm Olympic lifting, I'm like, PR, because I've never done that. Like, I don't know, you know.
But I think that's
PR. What's your PR snatch high pull? Don't know. Never done it. Let's figure it out.
Let's try one. See what number.
That's a super important mindset to have, is because especially we see it all the time, is people get so caught up in just their squat, bench, and deadlift number. And like, if they're not hitting a new one rep max, like, they're like freaking out. And I'm like, dude, you just took 90% of your max for 10 fucking reps. Like, what? Why do you complain about? Like, why are you? So
I'm
able to recognize all PRs is important. And if you've never done it before, it's a PR. And there's PRs, you know, there's life PRs, there's gym PRs, there's training PRs, there's volume PRs, there's work capacity PRs. Like, there's, if you open, like, broaden your view and look at training as a whole and look at your life as a whole and are constantly trying to be a little bit better each day, there's something that you can PR in every day, and there's something to improve on every day. And taking that narrow focus away from just your max squat, bench, or deadlift, or your max log or deadlift, or you know, circus dumbbell or whatever event you are attaching yourself to, and being able to broaden that and look at all the different things that you're crushing in life is probably one of the hardest but most important things to do to make lifting become part of your life.
I like that, bro. What you said, I like the PR every day. I like
every day, man. A little bit better. If you can,
that's a good mentality to have. I'm going to PR every day.
Yeah, on something. If you can PR on something every day, you know, that's a, by the end of the year, you're going to be in a whole different place than you were, you know, 365 days ago, 365 PRs ago.
And that's like, especially like this year with everything that's happened, like that's like an amazing mindset to have, is trying to PR every day. Because if, like, I while this year has sucked, at the same time, like, I am super thankful for 2019. Like, super thankful, because I started my business this year. My LLC, its first year was this year. So, like, I literally started a coaching business right when a pandemic happened. It's like the worst time to start a coaching business is right. But it, like, forces you to really, like, push yourself in terms of coaching and, like, learning things. Like, I'm reading a really good book right now. It's called Conscious Coaching. I don't know if you've
seen
it.
Great book.
Yeah, I just picked this one out. Really, it's a pretty good book so far.
Should be pretty. It should be required reading for any coach, because I think coaches get too caught up in, like, programming and periodization and the numbers, and they forget about the person in front of them. And I think that book by Brett Bartholomew really highlights needing to build a relationship with the person in front of you in order to help them the best to your abilities.
Well, it's funny because a lot of the stuff that he talks about in this book, I've already been doing, because obviously, going back to my Instagram rant, you guys see I'm very like, stop worrying about money, stop, you know, the greed, stop this, stop that. And like, I try, like, people always say, like, oh, well, you know, you walk the walk, or you talk the talk, but do you walk the walk? And it's like, yeah, I do. Like, even my training rates, if you can't afford my base training rate, what can you pay? Like, I have a client in Argentina who emailed me, dude doesn't even have social media. He has to go to like a library to use the computer. And the dude pays me literally the USD equivalent to $10 a month just for coaching, but he gets the same level, like, because that's what he can afford. So like, I base my rates off of what people can realistically afford. I don't think that, you know, costs should be something that prohibits people from getting things that are going to help them be better and healthier individuals. So, you know, it's walking the walk and talking the talk and lifting the lifts and hitting those everyday PRs in terms of being a good human being, is what we need to be focusing on in 2020, especially. But yeah, that book, it's been great so far. I read a couple chapters this morning. So
yeah.
Come on, guys, get it together. Jesus Christ. Do we need to get cue cards? Okay. You go now.
He usually touches his beard, but he's like, he was, I don't know. I can't see enough of him to see like this happening. So,
I can't tell what you can see. On my screen, you can see my full face, and you guys, I can't see. I can only see half your faces.
Your massive head.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember getting videos from Paul. Like, I'd send him like a video of my squat, and then it would literally just be him like, "Hey, okay, here's." Like, his face on the camera, like, just his head. And it's like, he always has the phone at a downwards angle, and he's like looking at the phone like he's sitting on his couch with bad posture.
You know, it's the shoulder pump from holding your phone above face. To look down, that shoulder pump. I don't have the endurance for that, man. I'm one rep and I'm done. I can't hold a phone above my head. Power lifter.
It's fine.
I totally forget what you were saying before we went off on that.
Well, I was just going to say that it was a great point that, you know, 2020 has been a great reminder of like what we should be thankful for, and that people could probably be a hell of a lot kinder to themselves.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, opening a business this year, this being also our first full year of being open, and just looking at other fitness businesses in general and the whole pandemic, I think it really showed that whole mindset thing that we've been talking about, and that just, you know, growth mindset and being able to broaden your view and find ways to PR in your business regardless of the current situations, you know, and that those lessons that we talked about in training and being able to come from this very destructive, individualistic view of training to this more broadened, beneficial, what's the word? Symbiotic.
Symbiotic, nice. Yeah.
Symbiotic relationship with the weight room and life in general. And I think the whole pandemic kind of put light on that and showed the people with the growth mindset being able to overcome and make things work and continue to, I don't want to use the word thrive because I don't think anyone thrived this year, but continue to scrape by versus the people that were just like, all right, we can't do this. This is bullshit. Like, fuck all of this. I, you know, and kind of quit right off the bat. And, you know, that mindset and training transfers to your everyday life. And I think that's a perfect example of that transference and the people that are kind of caught up in everything having to be perfect and their way versus the people that are going to make the best out of any situation put in front of them.
It's so hard though, man. It's so hard to like sit back and realize like it's really tough to come off of like a high and then realizing, okay, now I have to go through this lull and like face that lull and like work through it. Because if you're at the high and it drops down and you don't recognize that and like do the things you need to do to like get through that low period, it's just going to extend that low period. Like there was a time when I like let myself go as a coach. I was going through like really bad depression, really bad anxiety with my health. Like it was to the point where like I was going to the ER, like just to like, because like I like would psych myself out. My dad's a, like really big hypochondriac, and like I obviously got some of that, and I had to like work my way through that anxiety through a therapist and talking with people. But it's like sitting at the top and then coming down and not facing that really affected my business. And then I had to like come to the self-realization like, hey, you're going to fucking fuck everything up if you don't step back and like fix this. Sorry for the language.
We're past that. We have the not safe for work on this one already.
It made me take a step back, and like, it just goes to show, like, you know, you see these people on Instagram that have thousands of followers, and I'm one of them. I've got a bunch of followers, but that's why I try to be real, because you see these people with, you know, 200, 300, a million followers or whatever, and like their life is just awesome all the time. And like the people envy them because their life is awesome all the time, but they don't talk about the crap. They don't talk about when they wake up and feel like shit, or they oversleep their alarm clock, or they miss an appointment, or something happens with their car, or they have bad training days, or they go through a training lull, or they lose clients, or they missed a bill or something like that. Like, they don't talk about that, but that's the real shit that people need to see. Like, hey, you know, these people that I look up to are going through the same shit I'm going through, so it's going to be okay that I'm going through it. Their life isn't any worse or better than mine. And if they can make the change and they can pick themselves up and they can focus on the positive, so can I. You know, it's like, that's one thing we need to get away from. That's the one big bad thing about social media. Well, there's a lot of bad things I see. the one thing I see about social media that I really don't like is the overemphasis on everything is great all the time.
Yeah, toxic, I think people, positivity.
Toxic positivity.
That. People forget that Instagram is like just the highlight reels of people's lives. Like, nobody's out there posting the shit parts of their lives. They're posting the highlights. And
excuse you, I bitch every day.
Yeah, you did, and you got in a car accident. You posted that shit. You're like, fuck, I got a car accident.
And I just bought that car. It's like, I had it for like a month. Totaled that bitch. Dude, you should have seen the other guy's car. Like, he drove a truck, and like, my car is like really low to the ground. I just slid under his truck, and he gets out, and his muffler was loose, and he's like, well, that's gonna suck to fix. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that radiator is on the ground, and like, the muffler is dangling, you poor thing. Like, man, that's Texas for you. Living down here is wild. Being a liberal dude from the Midwest living in Texas is like, I feel like I'm in a Tim Burton movie. Like, it's wild down here. All like the roads down here, like, I love the food. A majority of the people are super cool. The weather's great. Like, I like Texas. Texas is awesome. But the roads, dude, it's the Autobahn. Like, I don't even know why they put lines. Like, no one cares.
Well, it's straight forever. You can see forever. The speed limit's already like 75. So,
yeah.
So, like, when the speed limit's 75, people are probably going like 100.
I have never seen a place, like, I've been all over the country, and every place I go to, California and Texas, there are so many accidents from people going the same way. Like, everyone that way, but there's like 50 accidents, and I'm like, how? Like, what? Oh man, I almost got ran off the road yesterday driving to the gym. It's like some dude in a big Chevy truck just blew past me, and like, it was one of those ones where they get right up to your bumper and then get into the next lane and pass you. And it's like, what was the point? Like, to scare me? Like, ooga booga. Like, I don't.
It's funny, because when we went to Texas for the strongman competition, I think it was the nicest everyone's ever been. It was like a small town in Texas, and they were so hyped there was something going on. We were like, went to McDonald's, and the lady was like, "Yo, you're doing the strongman competition. I'm the B there." Like, everybody was so hyped about it.
What town was it?
I've never. Denison, Texas.
Yeah, there's not a lot going on over there.
Yeah, so it was a good experience. So
I'm still waiting to see a tumbleweed. I want to see a tumbleweed so bad. And like, I got really bummed when I moved down here because I expected to like move down here and everyone was going to have spurs. Everyone was going to have a hat, like, and everyone was going to be like, howdy. But no, none of that's here. Instead of getting howdies, I get to get the fuck off the road. Like, I'm right lane cruising, man. I'm like going 65 in the right lane, just enjoying myself, you know, trying to pretend I like Dave Matthews Band. You know, but
right. Well, thank you for coming on. That was a great conversation. There's a lot of important takeaway points there. So thanks for your time.
I enjoyed it. Sorry I was late.
No, it's fine. We got our hour in. Usually after that, we start to lose people. So kind of wrap it up.
Well, to everyone who decided to listen, just we got what? 1 month left in the year? We got 1 month. End it with a bang. Set some serious freaking goals. Like things I did this month. Like I set goals to wake up earlier, to try and read one book a day, like an audiobook, a quick summary of an audiobook. Focus on like really talking to my clients. Like I talk to my clients on the phone every single week now. We talk on the phone every single week. And, you know, just trying to better myself and really like make a chart like I did and see the aspects of your life where you're really letting yourself down and try to improve those things. Like think of conscious ways that you can improve it, like not having enough time in the day. Okay, set your alarm clock earlier. Not getting all your chores done in a day. Okay, figure out a way to be more efficient throughout the week, getting your chores done. Tackling things at work, big projects. Okay, see what you can cut out of your life to help you focus on those big projects. Like if you need to take time off the gym, do it. Do it. There's so much more to life like than making sure that you can get to the gym every single day. If you need to take an extra rest day that week to get a project done, do it. It's worth it in the long run. So yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Remember,
yeah, man, picture thank you. Y'all.
Yeah. All right, boys. Well, I'm going to go drink more coffee.
So where can people find you if they want to learn more about you or get some coaching?
You can hit me up on Instagram at Terry Rady. I'm going through a rebranding right now with my business, so we haven't figured out that aspect yet. But just
Terry Rady. That's the rebrand.
It's Terry Rady. Terry Ratty. So
change the pronunciation and you're rebranded.
Yeah, exactly. So hit me up on Instagram. I'm also very responsive to people. If you just want to, you know, talk about ways, like also like, you know, if right now I'm trying to find families that are low income, that have children that like are having trouble being able to afford Christmas presents right now for their kids. I don't like, especially after this year, how cynical everyone's been. I think we really need to like focus on the kids to make sure that they don't grow up and be cynical assholes. So if you know of any low income families, hit me up. I'm trying to help them get toys to kids. So at Instagram, Terry Rady. So
there you have it. So thanks again. Maybe we'll get you on again sometime soon.
I'm doing pec flexes right now. All right, guys. Have a good day. Have a good day, Ryan.